Gambling with an Edge, with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is repeat visitor Cartwright. Cartwright is a software engineer who analyzes table games and then organizes teams to go out and play those games. Cartwright, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be back.
All right. Before we ask Cartwright some questions, Richard, you missed last week's show with Jimmy Jazz. Were you really in Hawaii with your family, or were you off playing a secret game somewhere?
If I was going to take my family on a vacation, would I go to an island that does not have a casino on it? But that's the official story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. Actually, I talked to his wife, and she said she had a great time, so maybe I'm believing his story. All right. On that show, Jimmy told us about a $5,000 match play coupon printed in the Houston Chronicle some years ago that was good at the Cushata Casino in Lake Charles, Louisiana, about 150 miles away from Houston. We wondered last week if you were involved in playing that promotion at all. Seems like a pretty sweet deal, especially if you could organize a busload of people you reasonably trusted to drive from Houston to Lake Charles. Richard, did you get in on that?
No, I heard about it late, and by the time I heard about it, I didn't think it would, you know, I thought it was pretty much dead by the time I heard about it, so... Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get a piece of that one.
All right. We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com concerning some unusual blackjack situations. A player was playing blackjack on the strip and was dealt a 2 and a 4 against the dealer ace with a running count of 13 with 4 decks left. He declined insurance. Actually, there were 5 decks left. With only 4 decks left, he would have taken insurance. All right, he declined insurance. When the dealer checked, he turned over another ace immediately and realized he didn't have a blackjack, so he gave himself a card, giving himself a 4. The player said, "Hey, you didn't give me a chance to hit." "Of course I want a card. I only have a total of 6. The pit boss came over and made a surprising ruling and gave that already exposed 4 to the player, giving him a 10, which is a pretty cool position to be in when you have a positive count. Unfortunately, the next card was a 3, giving him a hard 13 against a dealer exposed ace-ace. Our listener wants to know if he should have treated that exposed ace-ace as more like a deuce, on which he should stand with that kind of count, or as an ace against which he should hit. The player also wants to know how he should have interacted with the pit boss. Richard.
Right. So the first question of how he the first question was, should he hit the 13? And the answer is no. Generally, you want to just total the 2 cards, in this case, ace-ace, call it a deuce, and play it the way you would if the dealer's up card was a deuce. So yes, ace-ace is really better than a 2, but
quite a bit.
Yeah, but still you would stand with your 13 against a deuce. But the more important thing is he should not have said no when the dealer hit himself with a 4. Most of the places that I have ever played, they will refuse to ever back up a card once it's been played. So in most places you are not going to get that 4. So basic strategy in this situation is let the dealer play out his hand. If the dealer busts, great, you collect your money. If the dealer makes a hand, you start screaming, wait, you didn't let us play our hands. I only have a total of 6. And you know, more than 90% of the time, the boss is going to give you a push.
Good.
So you won't lose your bet.
Cartwright, would you handle that the same way as Richard?
I would have hit the 13 versus ace-ace, but...
Good. Tell us why.
The whole carding basic strategy that is in my brain says to hit that. I don't know anything beyond that. But, yeah,
sure
I think I would have handled
it
the same
way. I'm sure there's an index number for that, right? He was a running 13?
Yeah, running 13
well, yeah,
with
that's
five
probably
decks left.
True.
Well, good. Okay.
In any case, as far as handling the dealer's hit card, yeah, I would have done the same thing Richard said. I would have let the dealer play it out and hope for a bust and then take it from there.
Yeah, after I heard Richard's explanation of how to just to shut up about it and deal with it later, that makes perfect sense with me. I would have, I think that's great. I'll do it next time. I don't know if I would have come up with that as it happened. All right. There's another question from the same listener, which is also pretty lengthy. We're going to save that one for next week. There was some news out of New York City, in addition to the Tom Brady appeal. Video blackjack has been installed in the Resorts World Casino, or actually Racino, attached to the Aqueduct Racetrack in Queens, New York City. These machines have been approved for other New York racinos as well, and it's just a matter of time before you see thousands of them throughout the state. Video poker in New York racinos have been a state-sponsored ripoff. The pay schedules can look to be over 100%, but the random number generator inside those machines is set to return something like 91 to 93%. This is to help the state balance its budget and to otherwise benefit the New York Racing Association. Intelligent video poker players have learned, stay away from these games. Will the blackjack machines be similarly rigged in the state's favor? I have no idea. But it's the same governmental agencies approving these machines who approved the video poker machine ripoff. Personally, were I using a Bayesian probability approach to analyze these results on the machine, I would have set my a priori hypothesis that the state is going to hold 5% on these games where the rules would indicate should be 0.5% or so. Then I'll collect my data. I'm going to let others find out about it first. I'm expecting a ripoff. I'd be happy to be wrong, but I'm not going to be the one who pays the fee to find out.
Well, I mean, there was a post actually on one of the blackjack sites this morning about a guy who lives in New York who tried calling them to find out what the rules were on. And as you would expect, the people on the other end of the phone had no idea. You know, they had no clue. I would be suspicious, but I would at least go read the rules on the machine itself. So, you know, a lot of times when you start digging into the rules that are on the machine that no one ever bothers to read,
yes,
you may find that it'll say on there somewhere either this is, you know, this game is dealt out of one single 52 deck of cards. I mean, 52 card deck, or it may say something else. So I would at least go dig into what you can find by reading.
Yeah, in the picture in the newspaper, it looked similar to the big Shuffle Master machines where you have these more or less realistic-looking, beautiful dealers dealing cards. Whether it is actually a Shuffle Master machine or another one, I don't know. Whether if New York said, we want 5,000 machines and we want you to adjust this particular thing, I'm sure that's a big enough order that Shuffle Master would comply.
So. But aren't there some rules about being licensed in Nevada? And I mean, I don't know if these machines fall under that.
Well, there are IGT machines in New York racinos, so somehow
they've circumvented that.
They've circumvented that. All right. Civil forfeiture. We've spoken about this a number of times on this show. In a particular case I want to talk about today, a guy in Nevada, Elko, Nevada, had $167,000 seized by the cops while he was driving there. A federal judge ruled he should get his money back. The prosecutor is appealing that ruling and doing all sorts of legal shenanigans to make sure this guy doesn't get his money back. I don't think this guy was a gambler. He could have been. But he might. It could be very expensive to get his money back. And if he ever does. This case is different than the similar cases in other states because Nevada is a casino state. Drivers have money going from casinos to casino all the time. It's an overstatement to say that casinos can get any laws they want passed in Nevada, but it's not a huge overstatement. Nevada casinos do have lobbyists. A lot of the Nevada...
They don't need a lobbyist. This is a phone call. If Sheldon Adelson or Steve Wynn called up his legislator, you know, and said, stop this, it would stop. I mean, there is no legislator in Nevada that woke up in the middle of the night one night and said, you know, of all the pressing issues to the people of the state of the Nevada, I really think I should introduce a law outlawing messenger betting. Right? I mean, there weren't lobbyists. Somebody called them up and said, hey, we don't want Billy Walters to be able to send his people into sports books. Make a law against it. You know what I mean? So they could stop this really fast.
And so hope they do.
Yeah. You know, I had a friend stopped on his way back from Mesquite. I mean, he was less than 50 miles out of town. And there was a, you know, bunch of cops out there who were stopping people in both directions. You know, he saw a guy on the other side of the road later that, you know, they were going through his car with a flashlight under the seats. So, yeah, this is really a bad idea, not just for the players, but also for the casinos. I mean, my only thought is that the casinos must not be aware that this is going on and how bad it is for them.
Yeah, so this guy said he was driving to Sacramento. He's going to be buying some property with his... with a relative, and he was in Elko, so he had to pass through Reno and Lake Tahoe and a couple other places. Those casinos would like people with lots of money driving through town because they're going to stop and can't do it if the cop sees the money. All right, different subject. Steve Wynn made the news again. No big surprise there. He's very quotable. Anyway, a few weeks ago, he has his second quarter conference calls. He makes quarterly conference calls, and every other casino operator in the world listens into his conference calls. He's one of the most successful ones in the world. When Stevie talks, casinos listen. He indicated that at the Wynn and Encore, they'll be reducing odds on craps from the standard 3x, 4x, 5x, which is elsewhere on the strip, Two times. He thinks this will this tightening up the games will help his bottom line. Richard, do you have any thoughts on this?
I just think, you know, his thinking is really flawed. So if you have a $100 craps player who's taking 3, 4, 5 odds, so his average bet with his odds is going to be, say, $500. Steve Wynn is thinking that instead of being a $100 bet on the line, this guy will suddenly bet $200 on the line so that, you know, when he takes 400 odds, he now has, you know, 600 in total action. I think all it will do is reduce the amount of odds bets that people are taking, which will not increase his win. It will just lower his variance. And I think that the sophisticated craps players are just not going to play there, right? I mean, they're the people who really know about craps and like it, it'd be like a guy who knows how to play blackjack sitting at a 6-5 game. Why play there when he can walk across the street and play at a 3-2 game? I think his thinking is flawed. And it also, he thinks that his edge goes up, which is wrong. I mean, his element of risk goes down. But he shouldn't care about variance. right? He should care about the amount he wins.
Well, I'm going to disagree.
I agree completely with Richard on this one. I'm going to jump in because...
Go ahead.
I think that I have seen plenty of casino articles and things geared from the house's perspective, quote things like hold percentage and sort of looking at the wrong numbers instead of actually looking at how much money are they making from the table. And that was sort of the first thing that jumped out at me when I read about this, is the point that Richard was making. It's one of those things where changing the odds doesn't actually affect how much money per roll the casino's getting, unless they really do think that the gambler's going to bet more on the pass line when they can't lay or place odds. So, which is the opposite of what's going to happen. There is one caveat that he did. He said he would open it up to, if you're betting $1,000 or more, you can lay bigger odds. So perhaps Steve is thinking that he wants to shut out everybody but the high rollers, and he's trying to really discard the lower limit players from his casino. But $1,000 minimum is a pretty high threshold to set. So,
yeah, as you say, they get obsessed with this hold percentage, and when they should be thinking about win. And one of the most shocking things that was ever said on this radio show was Bill Zender told a story where he was having a talk with a table games manager and a casino manager. And he said to the table games manager, would you rather hold 10% of $2 million or 15% of $1 million? And the table games manager said, absolutely, 15% of $1 million. And Bill Zender said, but that's crazy. You're winning $150,000 instead of $200,000. He said, I understand that, but if my hold percentage is 10%, I'm going to get a raft of shit from the casino manager. But if it's 15%, then I'm doing a good job. And the casino manager said, yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I think that, there's basic economic principles that casinos for some reason tend to ignore. I typically had Steve win. I assumed that he was a little above that, but based on these moves, I guess maybe not.
You know, I think a big part of it is that they don't own the casinos anymore. They're,
right.
They're corporations, so they don't care how much they win. They just care about preserving their job, and the way they preserve it is by having a higher hold percentage.
Somehow I don't think Steve Wynn's worried about preserving his job.
No, in his case, I think he's just getting bad advice from someone.
But I'm first of all going to briefly disagree with both of you. It's actually more fun to disagree with two people rather than just one. And then I want to bring up a point that is totally different. There are a number of players who are comfortable betting a certain amount, like 500 a roll or 300 a roll or whatever it is. That's the amount they're comfortable with. And so they're going to adjust it in between the pass line and the odds to get to their comfort zone. So a significant number of people will actually bet more, contrary to what you guys believe. And that's so I think his hold will go up. The other point that I wanted to make was different. He publicized this information. And... it was in a second quarter conference call that everybody was listening to. Now, the casinos have to be competitive with the casinos they consider their competitors. Now, Steve Wynn does not care that you can go downtown to the D and get 10 times odds on craps. Nobody who plays at the Wynn is going to play at the D. They're just in totally different universes, even though they're...
But they are going to walk across the street to the Venetian.
I'm going to get into that. Now, speaking of the Venetian, if Steve Wynn called up Sheldon Adelson, which isn't likely to happen, they don't like each other, and so I'm not saying it ever happened, but bear with me. If he called up Sheldon and said, hey, we're going to make more money if we lower the odds on craps. And as long as we both lower them at the same time, then we both make more money and we don't lose any competitive balance. Now, if that conversation took place, that would be blatant collusion, highly against the law, if it could be proven. Putting out what he's going to do in a conference call that's listened to by everybody else largely accomplishes the same thing. Everybody finds out about it. They go, Steve Wynn's doing this. He's the smartest casino operator out there. We should do it too. I am willing to predict by Christmas, most of the big places are down to 2x odds on craps.
I'll take that bet.
All right. You're on for $10. Can you afford that?
Yeah, I can afford that.
All right. And we're talking about Bellagio, Cosmopolitan, Venetian, more or less his competitors.
REA,
can I get a piece of that action?
Yeah.
I can afford another 10. You want a piece of the 10 or another whole 10 by yourself? Can you afford this? But
yeah,
sure, yeah, sure.
I'll go another 10 with you, Bob.
But I would love to. You said you think his hold will go up, and I think that Cartwright and I both agree his hold will go up, but I think his win will go down. His profit will go down. And it would, I mean, these are the kind of things where I would love to own a casino because I would love the data to actually see what happens
exactly
when you do these things.
Yeah, but I think agree. This is going to spread like 6-5 blackjack. And
right.
it's a move that all of us would have said, it's terrible for the casinos, players will play less, blah, 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 and it's everywhere on the strip now. I think this will be the same.
But if they really were concerned about making more money, I mean, you would think they would try to find a way to add a couple of tens to Baccarat. I mean, that'd be worth so much more than whatever you did to craps, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually surprised Baccarat tables aren't covered in side bets at this point, just because those are such an easy way to add a extra couple ticks to the advantage.
Right.
That's true, and that is the big money. All right. Now, Cartwright, you were last on the show, July 31st of last year. I encourage our listeners, if you like what he said today, good chance you like what he said a year ago. If you think he sucks today, don't bother with the old show. But anyway, at the end of the show, you were giving an answer that we had to cut you off because we're out of time. I'm sure a lot of our listeners haven't been able to sleep for an entire year now because they wanted to hear the end of what you were going to say. Fortunately, we're going to allow them to hear it. Rest your story now.
Okay.
You were talking about a particular casino that was so lax that it allowed dealers to place bets themselves out of the tray. I was amazed by this. You assured us you meant what you said, and this guy was martingaling. Then Richard asked you if you meant the dealer was betting his toke money or betting money belonging to the house. Before you could answer, we had to cut you off. So, asking again, were the dealers betting their own money or house money?
Well, technically, they were betting house money. So, this was at a California card room. And at those places, the dealers are assigned a chip tray that they sign out with a certain amount of money in it. And at the end of the night, they turn that tray back in. And if it doesn't have the same amount of money as when they took it, then they are liable to the casino to cover the missing funds. And when you're actually playing the game, you're playing against a corporation. So there's a prop player that's sitting there, and the wins and losses actually come out of that bank. So the dealer's chip tray should square up at the end of the night and have an equal amount of money leaving as it did going in. But it is that money that this dealer was betting, and he started off just putting a casual bet on player, and he ended up going up against a pretty significant run of bankers and ties to the point that he had almost his entire bank on the player bet. It was a pretty tall stack of chips, and he was definitely sweating the action, and he did hit, so he won his $10 and hopefully never did that again.
It's just mind-boggling that the casino would allow that because,
yeah.
I mean, I can't think of a stronger reason for a dealer to try to cheat than when his own money is out there.
Right. Well, the floor man at the time was standing there laughing along with everybody else. So it was a very small place, very casual. Everybody seemed to know each other and have fun. And it was very common for dealers to pull their tokes out and bet those, constantly betting on the side bets and different things in blackjack and all of the games there. They were constantly betting on themselves. So yeah, but the biggest that I saw was that dealer that kind of lost his mind there for a little bit.
when they're sitting on the table all day, they ought to have a pretty good idea which side has the advantage.
Yeah.
I have not seen that come to pass very often. I think that most of the dealers that I've seen tend to, when their shift is over, if the casino will allow them to, just sit down at the other side of the table, or they'll go down the street to a different casino. I think that a lot of people are dealers because they ran out of money to bet.
Yeah, were I a casino owner, ain't going to happen. But I don't think I would want my dealers playing at my own house. There's a different mindset between trying to protect the company's assets and trying to win the company's assets. And so I would rather rather try to protect my assets and try to take the money from the casino across the street.
Well, and plus they, you know the dealers on the other shifts and things,
right,
too. So, I mean, I would probably let the dealers play slots or something, you know, but I certainly wouldn't let them play table games.
Yeah, I know it's a little different, but I know card rooms that almost require their dealers to prop. So
I've heard
if you aren't
that,
willing
yeah.
to play poker when your shift is over, you're not very well treated. And I know some dealers that have gotten some anxiety and actually quit because of it, because they just weren't comfortable playing the games. And there's also tremendous pressure as a dealer to way over tip, because you've got to work with these people. So you want to make sure that your coworkers are happy with you. So you tend to tip way too much as well. It's an interesting puzzle.
All right. On our last show, you explained that you were a computer programmer analyst, and that you work out how to beat various casino table games. And we asked you the question, if another player wanted to hire you to help analyze a particular game, are you available? On that show, you said, go talk to Stephen Howe. He's faster than I am and cheaper than I am, and I really don't want to be bothered with this. Has your answer changed over the last year?
Yes, slightly. Stephen is still definitely cheaper than I am, but I am interested. If somebody has a game that they found and want to have analyzed, I'd love to hear about it. And if I also find it interesting, we could probably work something out.
Very good.
Wasn't the answer I was hoping for.
What answer? Oh, you were hoping to. All right. Well, all right. But
well, let me qualify that. If you're a casino, don't bother.
No, but you're still glad you have his phone number, huh, Richard?
Yeah.
All right. So the next thing we want to talk about is not usually on our show. This is about AP travel. Cartwright had lunch with Richard and I a couple days ago, and he was saying something like he recently took a $65,000 honeymoon, and it cost him less than $5,000, and his lovely bride was sitting at the end of the table, and that was like, that sounded like a good deal, something our listeners would like to know about, and most of us do some traveling. So let's talk about AP travel. Cartwright, the floor is yours.
Okay. So when I got married last year, and we immediately started thinking about where we would go for our honeymoon, and I started thinking about it and talking to some people that I know travel a lot, and I discovered there is a world of traveling that is not unlike the world of casino play, where sharp players are taking advantage of various offers that are out there and traveling for nearly free and flying first class. And so it piqued my interest, and I started to do some research, and the real, I guess, central piece of it is that credit cards offer sometimes amazing amount of miles or points as sign-up bonuses. And as an example, Citi Card was for a while giving 100,000 American Airline miles if you signed up for their Executive Advantage card. They also offered a $200 statement credit, and the card came with a $450 annual fee. So you were out basically $250 to start. But you got this 100,000 American miles as long as you spent $10,000 in the first 3 months.
So wait, 100,000 miles will get you what?
100,000 miles will get you, it's about 60,000 miles to fly coach international. So you could fly pretty much anywhere you wanted coach. And if you want to fly first class, it's about 110,000 miles. So once you finish the $10,000 in spend, that would give you 10,000 miles. So basically, you could get a first class round trip ticket anywhere in the world.
For $250.
For one. Yeah.
Okay. Now, some people don't normally spend $10,000 in 3 months on their credit card. So what do you do to generate that kind of
right.
action?
So, well, since we were getting married, we were able to spend a pretty good chunk just as normal spend. But there's also, you know, the people that do this, there's a term called manufactured spending. And basically what manufactured spending is creating spending on a credit card that isn't actually costing you money or is only costing you a very small amount. And the primary way that this is done right now is through gift cards. So if you go to a drugstore or grocery store, you can usually buy Visa gift cards with your credit card. And the neat thing about Visa gift cards is that they have the word debit on them, which means that they can be used in debit transactions. You can get a PIN number and use them for debit transactions. And there are a number of, I guess, prepaid type cards like American Express. They have something called Bluebird. They also have Serve, and then they have one through Target. And they all work similarly that you can fund them with a debit card or with cash and use them to buy things or to pay bills. And so the typical cycle would be that you have this card you want to do, you need to get, say, an extra $1,000 in spending. You go to the grocery store, buy two $500 Visa gift cards, and then you take those gift cards to Walmart. That's the kind of primary place where you fund Bluebird. Take those to Walmart, and you go to the register and fund your Bluebird account with those gift cards. Then when you get home, you log into your Bluebird account and you use that account to pay the credit card bill that you use to buy the gift card.
All right. So
this is great. And there are no fees for any of this?
Even if there are small fees.
Buying a gift card generally has a fee. It's usually just a shot, a little bit less than a 1%.
So that's $5 on a $500
gift card. You can expect to pay, you know, $3.95 or $4.95. That sort of thing. Certainly, if you're just doing that for those miles, that's not all that great of a deal. But when you're doing it to clear a bonus, that $5 really is nothing compared to the value that you're getting for the 100,000 or 60,000 miles that you're going to get through the sign-up bonus.
This actually sounds an awful lot like bonus hunting back when internet casinos were popular.
It is very, very similar, and you can actually take it a step further if you want. So one of the things that I highly, highly recommend is using shopping portals when you buy stuff online. One of the websites to go to is cashbackmonitor.com. They sort of, you can put in any store and they'll tell you where the best place is to get cash back. And basically the way it works is these shopping portals have affiliate deals with the stores and they'll give you a cut of their affiliate fee. And so one of the most popular ones is American Express gift cards. So what you can do is you can often get about 2% cash back on an American Express gift card. So you go to a shopping portal, click on the American Express gift card link, buy, say, a $2,000 American Express gift card. You're going to get 2% cash back, which is $40. And then you use that American Express gift card to buy the Visa card, use the Visa card to fund the Bluebird account, use the Bluebird account to pay for the credit card bill. And after you've done all of that, you will actually have made money in addition to getting the points.
What about buying pudding? Have you seen Punch Drunk Love?
Yes. That was real. I mean, the Punch Drunk Love, that was actually a real thing that happened. A guy did the math and figured out that the miles he was getting were worth way more than the cost of the pudding. And he did that. And there's a lot of stories. When the U.S. Mint first introduced the Sacagawea dollar, they actually allowed you to buy them online with free shipping, and you could use a credit card. So what a lot of these AP travelers did, and there was one guy that bought a couple $1 million worth of coins, they would buy coins from the U.S. Treasury, Mint, and they would get shipped to their house, and they'd take the coins to the bank and deposit them. Because they were essentially buying money with credit cards. And I think that went on for quite a while. I totally missed that one. But
$1 million worth of Sacagawea silver dollars might be a bit heavy.
Yeah, and I'm sure your bank would be really happy when you showed up with all these Sacagawea dollars.
Right, yeah. Hopefully you've got a pretty good relationship with your bank. But these things pop up. You know, cruise ships used to allow you to get casino chips by signing them to your room, and then at the end of the cruise you could just pay with your credit card.
Correct.
So that was a way to churn.
Now Norwegian charged you 3% for that, but it used to be you could do 3,000.
Generally not so good. When you're doing this sort of thing, you want to get as far below a penny per mile as you can get.
Is that what miles are basically worth, is a penny a mile? Or?
Well, no, depending on the program. So United, Delta, American, they all have different structures, and they all kind of have different general values. And it also sort of depends on how much value you put into traveling first class. So the example with my honeymoon, we flew round trip first class on Japan Airlines. If we were to pay retail for those tickets, just that leg of the trip would have been about $44,000. Now, never in a million years would I spend $44,000 to travel round trip to Japan. So it's kind of a stretch to say that I value those miles at full retail, but I certainly got more than a penny a mile out of that transaction.
I have to say, as someone who has done a lot of international traveling, it is so worth it to not fly coach when you're on a 16 or a 20-hour flight. I mean, I've flown more business class than first class, but man, I definitely would value those miles for international flights.
I agree. I think that business class is the sweet spot when you're doing a lot of traveling. The added gain you get from first class is probably not quite worth the extra cost, especially if you're spending money.
I agree.
Which I would never do. But I think that business class is a minimum when flying internationally, especially if it's a fairly short trip and you don't have a lot of recovery time. But, you know, we took our honeymoon. We landed in Tokyo well rested. We slept most of the night on our beds and had a great breakfast and, stepped off the plane and we're ready to go. So we completely avoided any jet lag going there and coming back. We were pretty tired, so there was a little bit of jet lag, but it was certainly a lot less than if we had flown coach. I mean, my goodness.
I wish you were on the show a while ago. Bonnie and I just got back from Europe for, on a trip, and we paid more than the numbers you're talking about. So certainly not $44,000, but we paid, we got some discounts, but it was several thousand for the trip.
Yeah.
And
so yeah, it's one of those things where we, you really got to watch. And the other thing that I have to recommend is to time using these offers well. You know, some credit card companies, the base offers maybe 25,000 miles, but once a year they'll bump it to 50. And so you want to make sure that you're getting the max number of miles. When you apply for one of these credit cards, your credit score will take a little bit of a dip, you know, for the credit pull. But what I found is that now that I have this stack of travel cards, my credit score actually went up a lot. It was already good, but it's basically 829, I think was the last time I checked, or 840. It was crazy. So having this credit is actually good for your credit score, which is a little bit counterintuitive, but that's the way it works. As long as you pay it off every month, which you should.
So you mentioned that these Citi cards, you talked about them in the past tense, which makes it sound like they may not be offering this anymore.
Yeah, that's right. So there are Citi cards that have American miles, but they're no longer 100,000. So they are a card that if you spread out your applications, you can get more than one. So if you're really desperate to fly and that's the best deal you can get right now, you're not going to completely burn things out. Chase is a lot stricter about having multiples of the same card. But, you know, we had three Citi cards and three U.S. Airways cards, knowing that U.S. Airways was about to merge with American. So those converted to American miles. Another valuable thing is the hotel cards. So flying is an expensive part of traveling, but hotels are also quite expensive. I can't recommend enough the Hyatt card. You get, when you sign up, you get two free nights at any Hyatt in the world. And between my wife and I, we had four free nights at the Park Hyatt Tokyo, which is a fantastic hotel. Lost in Translation was filmed there for reference.
So if that's $600 a night,
yeah,
ballpark, you got four free nights between you and your wife.
Correct.
How much did it cost to sign up for this Hyatt card?
Well, from my perspective, the Hyatt card was free. There is a annual fee, but they also give you a free night at a Hyatt, not any Hyatt, a Category 4 or less each year. And I travel enough that I'll be using that for sure. So from my perspective, I think that the Hyatt card actually is a free card. You do have an annual fee. Off the top of my head, I don't know what it is, but you get enough back that I think that it covers that. They also have a point multiplier. You get 2 points for every dollar spent at restaurants. So that's a great way to build up your Hyatt points. So
not just Hyatt restaurants, any restaurants anywhere?
Any restaurants anywhere. If you're at Hyatt, you get more. I think it's 3 times. So that's another thing. A lot of these credit cards have categories where you get point multipliers. So Chase Inc. is a business credit card that gets 5 times points at office supply stores, which is hugely valuable. You know, you can go in there and buy, they cap it at $200 Visa gift cards, but at 5 times points, it's still a pretty sweet deal. And if I ever buy something on Amazon, for instance, I buy Amazon gift cards at Staples so that I get 5 times points for my purchase.
Wow. So now there must be some websites where people are keeping track of which card is the card to get right now, right?
So yeah, there is a huge number of blogs out there. Doctorofcredit.com is one that I like. He goes through more than just the travel stuff, but some deals with banks, you know, sign up bonuses with banks. I've got an offer sitting here that Chase will give me $500 if I open a checking account and a savings account with them. And once you kind of get this credit built up, you get some pretty interesting offers that I'm not entirely sure how they're making money on, but that's not my problem.
Again, it reminds me of internet casinos. You can do this in your underwear.
Yeah, right. It's just one of those things where it gets to be a hassle going around driving and buying the gift cards. It was the kind of glory days when you could buy the gift cards on Staples website. But they stopped giving you the points for that. So you used to be able to go through a cashback portal to go to Staples to buy gift cards. So you would get 5% cash back on the purchase, plus you would get 5x miles on the gift card. But that ended. A lot of these deals tend to end pretty quickly. Amazon used to allow you to buy, to pay someone $1,000 with a credit card using Amazon Payments with no fee. So I had, there were four of us that we just passed $1,000 around every month. It was, you know, you could do it once a month. So these things are there. I would say the central place to actually learn about this stuff is a web forum called FlyerTalk.com.
FlyerTalk.com.
Yeah, it's a forum that most of these threads have hundreds, sometimes thousands of messages. And if you're not a regular there and you post a question that was answered like 20 pages ago, you'll get yelled at to read the thread. So they're not particularly friendly folks for the most part, but they're very knowledgeable and there's a lot of information there. And you can pretty much keep up with all of the changes that are going on at that forum.
All right. I know a lot of internet blog sites that are inhabited by not so friendly folks. Yes. Anyway, we're going to do a few commercials now and we got some more questions for you. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. For the entire month of August, you can earn up to $500 in Chevron gas cards, essentially half price. Normally, to earn $25 in cash or free play, it requires $8,334. For points earned and redeemed in August, you can use that same number of points to receive a $50 gas card. Assuming you believe gas cards are the equivalent to cash, this is double points all month long for your first $83,000 plus. And double points at cashback at South Point is basically equivalent to 6x points at Stations or Boyd or some of the other casinos that have a 0.1 club. The new semester of free video poker classes has been announced. We're going to be starting them Wednesday, September 16th. I'm nodding over to Richard to pay attention now because usually he uses the commercials to check his Twitter feed. So they're going to start in the Grandview Lounge noon, September 16th. The entire schedule can be found at bobdancer.com. At the Palms, on the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Fridays, $3,000 first prize. Winners share $10,000, or actually the winners who claim the prizes share it. You don't have to be there at 7, but you have to collect it before midnight. And if you don't collect it before midnight, the money goes back into the casino's pocket. They have multiple drawing entries Friday in the afternoon, in the evening. For the past few weeks, they've been offering double points to everybody on Thursdays. I don't know if that's going to continue. If you're in town, you might want to check. Play for prizes. Through August 27th, you earn Walgreens gift cards. You can earn up to $100, $190 every day, Monday through Friday, at a rate of 0.20% for video poker, 2.0% for slots. When you earn double points, you still get the 0.20%. You don't get double the Walgreens cards, but you still get the basic card. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, it gives you corrections on games that you're not going to find anywhere else. Personally, I use that for quick quads practice. They have contests. This week, the game of the week is called 10 Play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coin per line game where periodically you draw a dream card. This is the best card possible given the other four cards. If you believe the machine has chosen a bad card, and there is one common error that it makes on bonus poker, it's easy to change the card to make it whatever you want. How often you get the dream card depends on the game. In Jacks or Better, where four of a kinds pay 125 coins, you get a lot of dream cards. In Triple Double Bonus, where quads pay at least 250 and sometimes 400, 800, 2,000, or 4,000, you get a lot fewer dream cards. All right. So we got a few minutes left. We didn't cover nearly what all we wanted to talk about with you, Cartwright, because we're talking about this AP travel, of which we actually still have some more questions on the AP travel. Any chance we can twist your arm to come back next week and finish our conversation?
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Oh, good.
Basically, one of the things I'd like to get into, too, is if you want to get started with the travel stuff, I recommend...
You got 2 minutes.
Setting a goal and targeting that goal and not kind of going overboard. There's a lot of accounting involved, so... it's a good idea to figure out what you want to do, accomplish that, and then take it from there.
So when Richard tweeted out that you were going to be our guest today, he got a picture back, tweeted back to him with a picture of a Chinese gentleman saying, "Is this where Cartwright comes from?" Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I am
You're busted, by the way.
Pretty serious Seinfeld fan, and one of the most famous Seinfeld episodes was when they were in the Chinese restaurant waiting for a table. And, yeah, the employee mispronounced George's name, and when he got a phone call and yelled Cartwright instead of Costanza, and so I thought that would be a funny name to use. It was a toss-up between that and Joe Davola, so... Any Seinfeld fans out there should know who Crazy Joe Davola is.
I remember Art Vandelay, but...
Art Vandelay, yeah, that's...
Yeah, we've never had the Soup Nazi on our show before. Right. Now, is it fair to conclude that your real last name is Costanza?
You can conclude that all you want.
Yeah. I have a quick question before we go. So, one of the problems I have is, you know, with all these different programs that you're signed up for, all the different airline mile programs.
Yes.
Is there some way to like see that in one place, or do you have to go sign in to all your different programs?
Yeah, there are some services that have tried to sort of consolidate that, but I haven't seen anything that works well. So I have a spreadsheet and I log into each one individually. It's not particularly fun, but so, you know which program targets which area. So if you're flying to Asia, you want to fly Cathay Pacific or Japan Airlines, so you log into American Airlines, that sort of thing.
I see.
And then some of the programs allow you to transfer the points to other programs, like the Chase points are really valuable because you can transfer to a United or British Airways or even Hyatt for hotels. And also the SPG hotel card has a really good transfer program. So those points are worth a lot because you can actually use them for hotels, for flights, for just about anything.
Yeah, this is terrible. I never stay at hotels I pay for. I get them all comped by casinos, so I can't take advantage of these things. Life is tough.
If you go to Japan, you're probably going to have a hard time with that. So
that sounds right.
All right. Well, we're out of time. If you want to, we welcome your questions. You can send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered automatically at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. You can find all the old shows at bobdancer.com. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Cartwright. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Good day.
Thanks, guys.
In iTunes. And episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.
Views and opinions expressed on this program were those of the hosts and guests and did not necessarily reflect those of Vegas All Net Radio, its affiliates, or its parent company.